This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Shouldn't you be at work?
And Love. Oh, and Love, he's got a real chance now. Peter and Love.
John Walk will take the penalty. Up goes Dion Dublin.
Unknown goal from Ruddock.
Full back break here for Kiwabia.
Panister and Bruce in the queue again.
Bruce scores.
Go leg, hit leg, hit leg over the top. Back now.
Now you know him better than anybody, probably. Do you back him to score quickly? Yes or no?
Yes.
Only Hutton.
No.
Hello and welcome to Quickly Kevin, Will He Score? It's Series 7. This is Episode 3. I'm Chris Skull and joining me, it's Josh Widdicombe.
Hello.
And please don't tweet him at _Michael_Marden with your clips of Peter Schmeichel getting lobbed, because he's absolutely not interested, especially if Sky show the best goals from 96-97 and open that package with two chips over Peter Schmeichel this week. It's Michael Marden.
Hello. Yeah, I want a word with whoever put that package together. That definitely felt deliberate.
It's unbelievable. Someone at Sky must know. That's not an accident.
You start with what takes you back to a time, don't you? You start with what makes you feel familiar.
Jim, one of two things are true. Either it just the two best goals from the 96-97 season just happened to be lobs over Peter Schmeichel because there's so many of them, or they know and we're doing a little nod and a wink towards his podcast, but by picking two lobs over Peter Schmeichel, I'm happy in both scenarios.
If you were the person that put that package together, please do get in touch. I'd like to send you something in the post.
Yes, because we have a free Patreon membership for you. So we should start with announcements. So we are doing a live show. Don't worry, not outside somewhere where you can't legally go. We're doing it on Zoom on Sunday night, October the 25th. We're very excited about this. Because we did one during the first lockdown. At the time of recording, this isn't referred to as the second lockdown, but it may be at the time of broadcast. And it was brilliant. It was genuinely one of the best things we've ever done. We had such a good time. So finally, we've got around to doing a second one. We've got two Quickly Kevin legends, Tom Crane and Matt Ford. They're both going to come on. We're going to interview them separately. We're going to do a Q&A with you guys, whatever questions you want. And then we end with the ultimate. Michael has simulated a game of Championship Manager 97-98 between Crane and Ford's teams that they've picked. We get to watch the match, and it is a spectacle you would never believe is fun to watch, but it really is, isn't it?
It really is just fun to watch Championship Manager without the pressure of having to make decisions on the pitch. It's like going to a game, but it's a Championship Manager game. It's really exciting.
It blows my mind that 23 years after it came out, a text-based football management game is such a compelling watch.
Yeah. It's an unbelievable watch. It's a great... we had such a good time doing it last time. And what we've decided to do is turn it into a tournament. So this is one of the quarterfinals. We're going to have all of our live Zoom shows as they come. Going to be quarterfinals, then semifinals, and then the big final. And it's £5. That's all it is. The link, we have tweeted it out. It's on all our social media. Last time we... It was about 3,000 people watched it last time,
didn't it?
Yeah,
that's right, yeah.
I'll be honest with you, there isn't a capacity, so I can't really go, so get in quickly, because there isn't a capacity. But genuinely, we had 3,000 people watch it last time, So go on. It's £5 for your ticket, plus a small booking fee, which we don't see. Don't worry about that. If you want your ticket free, it's free to Patreon XJ8 members. So go on to the Patreon, sign up, and you will all get a link to the Zoom live show on Sunday night and all the Zoom live shows, which you will get for free forever if you're a Patreon member.
And to sign up, just get yourself over to patreon.com/quicklykevin.
Thank you to everyone who has joined the Patreon. We should say, or as we actually call it, the Quickly Kevin Fan Club.
Yeah, it's official name.
It's an official name, the Quickly Kevin Fan Club. The Shot of Glory episode has gone down very well, and the Steve Bruce ones have begun. Steve Bruce, word for word, as we said. We are currently just readying the two bonus episodes for next month. Also readying for New Year, the first piece of merchandise. The extra long Jamie Redknapp episode was out on Saturday morning. You'll get all your episodes Saturday morning. There's lots more perks. Lots more perks. Go over to patreon.com/quicklykevin to sign up. Okay, we've had so much good correspondence that I just want to get on with it because there's like loads to get through.
I'm Jim Rosenthal, and this is the Electronic Postbag.
You've got mail.
Now, we discussed Lucozade last week. This is from John Simmons. We discussed whether in the 90s it was used for medicinal purposes.
Yeah.
Hello, chaps. Love the podcast, and the mention of Lucozade prompted me to email. Lucozade was, in fact, created by the pharmacist William Walker Hunter in 1927, called Glucozade, and was originally designed to be medicinal.
Ooh.
It was then bought by Beecham's in 1938, and the name was changed to Lucozade. To add more fuel to the medicinal fire, my dad, a retired GP, still drinks Lucozade when he's unwell and absolutely swears by it.
Well,
there you go.
That's a bit of 90s medical advice for you.
That is amazing, isn't it? I always thought it was bullshit, but actually, the John Barnes change was obviously it wasn't selling enough medicinally, so they got John Barnes involved and added the word sport. Right. Well, it's set the world on fire, Jamie Mourinho's man of the match jacket, hasn't it?
We should point out we've had a lot of people on social media messaging saying it's Jamie, not Jamie.
Oh, Jamie.
Jamie.
Yeah.
I always presumed it was Jame. Jaime Mourinho. Mourinho.
Yeah, we've had emails about pronouncing Mourinho as well. I think it's Moreno. Jaime Moreno.
How did they know who we were talking about? So, we'd like to see Janino receiving what he won when he was man of the match in the Coca-Cola Cup.
Yes, please.
Oh,
here
what?
It comes. So, this is Janino at his post-match press conference on Sky Sports 3 live. This is a photo of him receiving his gift for being man of the match.
Who's the captain there? Is that that's not
I don't
Robson,
know.
Is it?
No, I
look
don't
at his, look at his face.
So Michael, can you describe what you're looking at?
So it's the boot room basically behind the scenes at whatever stadium they're playing at. Janino is there with some kind of commentator slash presenter and the captain of Middlesbrough at the time. And he has been handed a Coca-Cola branded mountain bike. And I would say Janino is looking down. Basically, he's saying, what the fuck is going on?
What am I going to do with that?
So we had another email, sorry not to credit you on this, by someone who said that when Ravanelli joined Middlesbrough, they put him up in a house fully furnished, right? And when he left, the story goes that he took all of the free furniture and all of the fittings, but left propped up against the house were his two Coca-Cola mountain bikes. What I don't understand is why these stories only ever seem to happen to Middlesbrough players.
It's such a wild west up there, isn't it?
They're dominating the Coca-Cola man of the match world.
Why have Coca-Cola gone, we'll give them a bike if they win man of the match? Who had that idea? It makes no sense.
It's so strange. But maybe the jackets won't go. They didn't realise they were being worn around the bowling alleys of the Northeast.
Do you want a little update on the jacket that was on eBay?
Oh yeah, yes. Of course.
I am I'm currently the highest bidder.
How long left?
8 hours, 48 minutes left. Oh. So by the time this goes out, we'll see. Hopefully I've won.
Does it end at 5 a.m.?
Yeah, it must be. It ends at 5:52 tomorrow.
Oh, so it's being sold from abroad.
What time zone's Jaime Moreno in? Could be him. Michael, has there been much competition from listeners, you think?
Well, there's been six different bids, but the frustrating thing is you can sort of make an offer before someone's put in an official bid. And I tried to lowball the guy. So he had it on for 50 quid and I said 30 quid and he said 50 and I said 35 and he said 50. And then and eventually I was like, well, I'm just going to pay 50 quid for it. But I didn't press make an offer. I pressed bid. Oh, and the moment you put a bid in, it activates the bid process. Oh, so you can't then make an offer. So I could have got it for £50. It's now currently going for £94.
Oh, so you've cost it.
You could get 9 messages from Marcus Bent and still have 4 quid for a pint. This is from Joe Henderson. Hi, guys. Delighted to say that I'm a member of the Quickly Kevin fan club. I wondered if perhaps Quickly Kevin could also be used as a public apology forum for those who've wronged 90s footballers in the past. Is that our kind of thing?
Yeah.
Well, a sort of confessions style.
Yeah. Have we got any confession style music?
We have now.
Yes. When I was 13, I took over my elder sister's paper round, delivering the local Bristol-based daily, The Evening Post. She showed me the route as part of the handover. And as we sat our bikes down around a more affluent house in our local town of Nailsea, she informed me the house belonged to the one and only Sean Gota, at this time absolutely ruling the roost at Bristol City. A few months later, and Sean, who I only ever actually met once to give me a £10 Christmas tip, but I still feel warrants first name terms, had played a particularly poor game. And I remember the back page headline of the Evening Post being very disparaging. I didn't want Sean's form to suffer on reading this, so I removed the front and back page spread and delivered a condensed version of him that started on page 3. I'm not saying it worked, but he did hit form of his life and got the move to Man City, so that's for other people to decide. However, I wonder if he knew the tactics behind the edited newspaper. If not, I'd like to apologise for taking matters into my own hands and delivering an incomplete Evening Post. Do you think Joe Henderson did the right thing there?
Sean Gota would surely remember that. That is notable, isn't it? To have a nightmare and then have a paper turn up with all your bits missing.
But if I was Sean Gota, if I knew I'd had a bad one, I'd be avoiding that anyway. I
mean, yeah, do you think he didn't even look at the paper?
What strikes me is the Evening Post is the Bristol local paper, right? Now, Sean Gota's not local to Bristol, is he? He started out at Manchester United. He's from Bermuda, in fact, isn't he, Sean Gota? So he couldn't be less local to Bristol geographically, I suppose. But if I move to an area, I don't subscribe to the local paper unless I'm purely doing it to read up about myself because I'm playing for the local football team. Do you know what I mean?
That's an interesting theory. I think it's the only theory, unless he just thought I could get to know the area better if I subscribed to the local newspaper.
I can't imagine Sean Gota every evening is reading up about the local news in Bristol, is he?
I really like the idea that, coincidentally, throughout his career, local paper boys have been doing this to Sean Gota from Bermuda to Manchester to Bristol. So every time he checks a paper to see if anyone's covered his performances, there's nothing there. He's like, oh, for God's sake, I'm not in the paper again.
I'm just looking at Sean Gota's Wikipedia. So he played 36 games for Bermuda and scored 32 goals.
Too right. He's an absolute goal machine.
Surely Bermuda are rubbish. How is he scoring 32 goals for Bermuda?
Yeah, they must be playing some dreadful teams.
That's amazing. What an insane goals to games ratio at international level.
This is the only podcast with that phrase said with such passion. You know, when we go off the record, I think we should say, can we go Patreon only for this next email?
All right, look, correspondence over with. It's been another huge week for 90s news. It's time for the 90s o'clock news. Paul Bracewell spotted in local newspaper battling town planners. Cadbury's Boost eyeing up David Boost inspired Boost for Cadbury's Boost sales. And Ricky Otto on Songs of Praise.
Ha 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 ha!
another bumper week of 90s football news. Let's go with our top story this week. Paul Bracewell spotted in the local newspapers. He's fuming with town planners. Paul Bracewell bought his home like 20 years ago. He's got a big bit of land. He wanted to build some houses on it. And then out of nowhere, Durham Council have said, Paul, your back garden's green belt. Out of nowhere, unilaterally. Paul's been battling Durham Council for 16 years. He says the whole saga has been very frustrating, to say the least.
16 years.
And Andrew Cox sent in the story. There's some pictures, if you Google Paul Bracewell, Durham Town Planners.
No, thanks. Don't need it.
Paul Bracewell, like, it's one of those great, they've sent a local news photographer out there. And so it's Paul Bracewell just walking around his garden looking sad. Like leaning on the trees that he wants to knock down and just adding some colour to a wonderful
draw attention to the trees, Paul. That's one of the problems.
Right, there's more. Okay, so Cadbury's. I have been in touch with a representative of Cadbury's, okay?
Well.
Yes, they have reached out and they've made it very clear to me that they are very much happy to send us some Cadbury's Boost bars. However, it's also been hinted to me that if we can get David Boost involved with some Cadbury's Boost activity that might boost sales, they will send us more Cadbury's Boosts. Okay. So I know David Boost is on Twitter. I know. Quickly, Kevin Hivemind. If we could have David Boost eating a Boost, maybe David Boost singing the David Boost advert from last week. The options are limitless, but what isn't limitless is the supply of Cadbury's Boost we may be given. Okay, it sounds like we're going to get a few boxes.
We'd love that. We'd absolutely love that.
Christmas is round the corner. Picture us turning up to all our families with massive boxes of Cadbury's Boost.
Also, if you can think of a footballer with a surname Crunchy, I'm absolutely all over it.
I'm just trying to think if there's anyone in the 90s called Advent Calendar.
God, I need to hear about Ricky Otto being on Songs of Praise.
Thank you to Robert Wally, who sent in the following news story. I'm not sure when this happened, but it sounds like it may have been around Easter, because I'm just going to read to you the Sky description of this programme. Title, Songs of Praise. Catherine Jenkins celebrates Easter at a young church, St Luke's Gas Street in Birmingham, and Sean Fletcher meets former Birmingham City footballer Ricky Otto, now a preacher, also in HD. So I had a look at his career. I was like, it's legit. It checks out. So he trained after he finished football. He was a probation officer for a while. Then he founded a consultancy working with offenders. Then he became a Christian, did a degree in theology. Now he's a preacher. He's on Songs of Praise. He's made it. Ricky Otto.
I'm going to say it. We want your teams of, now, not just religious footballers. That's not interesting because there's lots of religious footballers. But religious footballers who are ministers or preachers or whatever the term would be depending on the denomination. The midfield has already got Ricky Otto on the wing and Gavin Peacock in attacking midfield. I think Taribo West was a preacher as well. I seem to remember that. So if you've got any more to add to that, I'd love to hear them.
Get in touch with the show. Email hello@quicklykevin.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter @quicklykevin. And sign up to the mailing list at quicklykevin.com.
Okay, as we've said before, our Zoom live show is on Sunday night. Matt Ford and Tom Crane. You can get your tickets on social media. But now, we've always wanted to talk about it. Let's do it. It's Man City in the 90s with Jason Manford.
Our guest this week rode the roller coaster of Manchester City's most tumultuous period from the terraces. Now, he's one of the Northwest's most recognisable comedians and pre-pandemic could be found starring in a production of Curtains in London's West End. But perhaps the greatest achievement on his CV is being able to say that the first autograph he ever got was from Paul Lake. Please welcome to Quickly Kevin, Jason Manford.
Hello, how are you?
Yes, good. Is that right? Your first ever autograph
was
from Paul Lake?
It was actually, yeah, from... future England captain, as we often dubbed him. That never happened because of his injury. He actually lives on my road now.
Does he?
Does he?
Yeah, that's funny old turn of events, yeah. So we're sort of like pals in a weird way.
Weirdly. Does he remember you asking for that autograph?
Don't think so, no. Weirdly, people who get asked for autographs don't often remember the story as much as people who ask. That seems to be the rule. Yeah, I remember I was working at the Buzz Club in Chorlton in South Manchester. It was a comedy club, probably before your time, Josh, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I'm aware of Chorlton more than the Buzz Club.
Yeah, so it was like the big, that was like the club, and you saw Peter Kay there and, you know, just Steve Coogan and Caroline Ahern and everybody. And I used to work there collecting glasses, and then one week, there he sat, as if he's not a legend, just sat there like a normal person. What? And we could go near him? What? So, yeah, and he was just like one of my favourite players, and asked him for an autograph, and he signed a, I think he just signed it on like a, I don't know if it was like on a receipt or something. You know, like something crap as well. Something that you're not going to keep forever.
Yeah. Like you, you didn't have your Paul Lake Prozac card with you ready to be signed.
Gutted.
Well, we were saying, we're not sure we've ever had a guest before who's been so public with their love for Championship Manager and Football Manager. We've been, like, just in the warm-up a second ago, we've already started talking about it. So how addicted are you? Or were
I mean, less so now, obviously. Now I've got children and bills and, you know, a life and stuff. But, I mean, to a point where they... I mentioned it. I think I was like the first comic. And I spoke to some of the guys, Miles, who makes the game, Jacobson, once, who actually put me in the game. They put me in the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm listed in like the thanks to. In, I can't remember what year it was. It might have been 2006, 2007 or something like that. And they put me in the game because I sort of did a routine about it on Live at the Apollo. And so to talk about what was essentially a little game on such a huge show, this is when Live at the Apollo was, you know, getting 6-7 million viewers. They had a meeting about it, I found out later. in the Football Manager Towers to say, we've just been mentioned on like a mainstream TV show. That means we're, you know, if people are using us as a reference, as you know, Josh, in comedy, like if you're using people as a reference or a company as a reference, that is the reference, you know, so.
But did you find with Championship Manager, how much explaining are you having to do when you're writing about Championship Manager or Football Manager? Like,
I mean, it was, again, weirdly, when you just, as a stand-up early on, you write about what you know, don't you?
Yeah.
write about what you know. Well, I know about this. So, and I remember having a couple of sort of asides about it, just sort of saying, I used to play it at night when my girlfriend at the time would go to bed, and I'd just be in the corner on this... You know, this, again, before little, like, laptop, like, I looked like I was in some sort of spy film. I'd, like, a big screen here, you know, and my tactics up here on the wall. You know, I genuinely put a shirt and tie on for the cup final. Like, I really went for it. And so the story I talk about on Live at the Apollo, weirdly, actually came about full circle in the last couple of weeks. So the story I talk about is about me sort of playing it in the corner, and it's sort of my girlfriend at the time complaining about the clicking. It's just clicking. It's not even a real game. It's just clicking. It's like spreadsheets. You're just playing spreadsheets. And the story I tell is I go and do a charity gig, which genuinely happened. I went to do this charity gig at Man City, and I went with my dad. I did the gig, and it was all fine. And Micah Richards was there, and afterwards, I sort of met a few of the players. My dad said in the car back, he went, "You're a bit aloof with Micah Richards there, for like you weren't, you know, everyone else you were sort of really keen on. And then Micah Richards, you were a bit not bothered." And I thought, oh, that's weird for me because I'm usually nice to everybody. And it's only when I got home, I realised that Micah Richards had turned up late for training 3 times on Football Manager. And I'd had to fine him. And now his description was, Micah Richards hates Jason Manford. Like, that's what it said on his little description. And so obviously it must have been in my head that this guy does not like me at all.
Has he, have you like crossed paths with him since?
Well, yeah, weirdly, only a couple of weeks ago, he's so brilliant on Sky Sports. I mentioned it online and said, oh, Micah Richards, what a breath of fresh air he is on Sky Sports. He's absolutely fantastic. And then in brackets, I just put, all is forgiven, hashtag Football Manager or whatever, you know. And he reposted it and put, about time, gaffer.
What a wonderful conclusion.
Yeah, 20-year gag. 20-year callback.
Let's talk a bit about your kind of experience of Football Manager. Who's on your Mount Rushmore of favourite Football Manager players?
Oh,
the names that stick
goodness.
In your head.
Yes. What was the player called that was... it was an American lad and he was like 14.
Freddie Adu.
Was it Freddie Adu? It was Freddie Adu, yeah. Freddie Adu, what a player. And then where did he go? In real life, nowhere. That was an absolute killer. I mean, we used to play it. There was a point where I was 16. I remember my friend Simon and Paul. We used to play it together, like in this, huddled over my friend Paul's computer. And we'd play it nonstop. And we'd do like the transfers, like the other two had to turn away while you put your bids in. And it was all, real. And
that's how it works in the Premier League.
I think that's how it took, right? Turn away, Pep. While Klopp does his transfers.
That's why Pep pays so much money for defenders, because he's turned away when other people are bidding for
Kyle Walker. What's going on. Yeah. So we play. I remember we finished school in that, when you're 16, and we've got college starting in September. And I remember that summer, was just a Championship Manager summer. We just played it, and we went to Paul's every day, and we ate pizza and drank pop and we played Football Manager all summer. And there was definitely a point where, at least at some point, the three of us came together to go, I wonder if, like, together, if we live together, like, like, and we've already worked out what dole money is, right? Maybe we don't even need college. And like, genuinely thinking, how can we make this into a real thing? And I remember I actually spoilt it. And it even comes up now, like, every so often, if Paul's had a drink, it comes up now where me and him were after the same striker. And he was Bolton, I was Grimsby. We had the shirts. Like, it was, we really went for it. And I remember we were going for the same striker, and it came back. He's accepted the position at Bolton for up front. But I had the mouse at that time. I remember going, and I remember clicking no, like, and then he came to Grimsby instead.
Oh,
and that was the moment. I can actually almost hear Paul's heart break, but it was the sort of, not the realism, obviously there's no realism at all, but the fact that we were so ingrained in this game. I remember that being the exact moment that we all just went, this is not.
That's the moment when paradise suddenly goes wrong, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It was just not real anymore. That's... And even and every so often, like, we'll be out having a drink, and Paul have a couple too many. He'll go, "You remember that time where you signed my player for Grimsby?" I'm like, "It's been 35 years. Like, it's been 25 years. You've got to let it go, Paul."
And you mentioned Grimsby there, but I read as well that you used to play a lot with City, your own team.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I always play the first season with City because, just to get used to the game and the layout and the, and all that when you first get it. But, and certainly early on when you were City, it was a real challenge. Now it's sort of, it's just stupid. You know what I mean? It's not even, I'm watching Pep every week thinking, I mean, I'd probably win 80% of these games in real life. It's easy.
So obviously City now, we're aware of that, they're the richest club in the world, et cetera, et cetera. How did you initially start supporting the underdogs of the 80s, I suppose?
Well, it's Manchester odd City. As well, because I was born in Salford, which is a real Manchester United area as well.
Yeah.
But my, I guess I was just lucky, I suppose. My dad was a big City fan. My granddad was a big City fan. In fact, my great-granddad was the very first person in the UK to be arrested for football hooliganism.
Like, wow. Episode of Who Do You Think You Are That would be.
Yeah, it's on his criminal record as football vandalism, I think it was called at the time or whatever. He punched a copper. So
route one,
punched a copper,
and from that an empire was born.
Look how far we've come since.
I know, something's never changed. Well, it wasn't a police horse. He had a bit of class. But Yeah, which was funny because I think the granddad on the other side as well was a copper. I think they were both either side of the sort of footballing divide almost. But
like yeah, Romeo and Juliet.
It's a weird thing that my daddy's sort of proud about it. In a weird way. He's like, hey, you're a great granddad. First person of the rest.
I'm going to say, it does sound like you're sort of proud about it as well.
Well, you know, violence in the past is all right, isn't it?
Yeah.
We glorify it a little bit, don't we? He wasn't a great granddad at the time. You know, he was a young man. Now, that would have been a better story. he was 90 years old. But so it was just, you know, a long line of City fans really. And then my mum was a City fan as well. And my mum's one of 11 on their side. They were Irish Catholics, came over in the 50s and they were all City fans, apart from one uncle, my uncle Brendan, who's a United fan, sort of the black sheep of the family. And it was just always City really. It was always.
And what kind of period did you start supporting them in then? When would you have?
So, well, from the first baby grow essentially. But the first sort of years I remember, I guess about sort of, yeah, probably late 80s. I remember there being a moment where, because obviously we used to get battered every week.
Yeah.
And like properly battered. And I remember there being a time where I came home and like it was just going into school on that Monday. After, you know, United had won, it was that, you know, just the start of their sort of dynasty and empire, and City were just on the slide. It wasn't going well at all. And I remember being about 7 coming home, and I said to my dad, so this is like 88, 89, it's like 87, that sort of time. And I come home and I said, Dad, I've cracked it. I've worked it out. And he said, what are you talking about? He said, you know, like City get beat every week. And I've got to go into school and get picked on by all the other like boys and that. He's like, yeah. I went, why don't we just support United instead? Huh? 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 Like, genuinely, like, I've cracked it. And my dad was like, that's not going to happen. Like, you know, it'd be like coming home and changing religion. Like, it'd be that big, you know. And even now, I'm nearly 40. Even now, sometimes when my dad is resting, you know, just in the corner, he'll look at me and I can still see it in his eye that he's not really forgiving me for that moment when I was 7 and suggested we might support United instead. Like, I still think he might bring it up on his deathbed. It might be one of them, you know.
So we're about to fire up the DeLorean, go back.
Oh, yeah,
in time.
Go on then.
But I wondered, like, where's your head at with this? Do you look back on that and go and think it was better than now? Or are you so much happier now you're competing in the top flight every season?
Better. I don't know if it's better because now I'm busy with stuff, with life and kids and jobs and all that sort of stuff. Whereas when I was a City fan, that was all I thought about. And, you know, there was posters on my wall and, you know, my favourite players. And there was, you know, and you went, we used to go at the, so we rarely could afford tickets to go to the game. So it was rare that we went. But what City would do when we were up at the old ground at Main Road, we'd walk there. It was about a sort of, I don't know, half an hour walk from where we lived in Whalley Range. We walked to Moss Side, and if you got there for the last sort of 10, 15 minutes and you found the right gate with the right old guy on it, he would let you in for the last 15 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And just watch. So we'd end up watching the last 15 minutes of City, like, just, and you always have to find the right guy. Like, and if he wasn't on, you were like, I can't believe I walked half an hour and he's not even on this week. But yeah, we'd get there it was great. But we were obsessed. Like, I mean, we had two blue budgies called Manchester and City. Like, genuinely the best, you know, these two little sky blue budgies in our, City died. Well, they both died, obviously, 20 years ago.
Did you try and replace City with a red one called United? Your dad never wanted in the house.
No, I remember actually one of them flew out of its cage. And so after Manchester had died, City was I think City had died and Manchester was quite depressed about it. And sort of looking in his little mirror, sort of, because he just thinks it's his mate, doesn't he? And I remember one time we came back from the match, and what had happened was, while we were out, was that Manchester had flown down and sort of got his claws stuck in the carpet. And our dog at the time had tried to, I think help it. I don't know. Maybe I'm a kid thinking that animals can help each other like a Disney film. He was helping him. And but anyway, has essentially broken his leg.
Oh.
And vets and all that. I put a little splint on it and everything. Like this tiny budgie. Imagine a budgie with a little tiny splint on its leg. And while we were out at the football one time, my mum had sort of put it on the bottom of the case so it could drink some of its water, left the room. But when she came back in, it had fallen in the water and drowned.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my word.
I didn't know this story could get more horrific.
And when we came back, it gets even worse. No, not worse, just more heartbreaking. When she came back, we could hear my mum crying in the kitchen.
Oh, my God.
And she was huddled over a budgie, sort of trying to, like, give it, like, a tiny CPR, like, just with her little fingers on its little budgie chest. Like, my dad's like, it's gone, love, he's gone.
What a metaphor for the club.
Yeah, it really was. Some mad stories.
All right, let's start in the 89-90 season. You kind of touched on it there, but yourself and United, you're on par at the start, right at the start of the 90s. I think that 89-90 season, you finished 14th, same points as United, but in that season, you beat them 5-1 in the league.
Oh, well, I remember that one game.
That must have stuck in
your head. Yeah, I mean, I must remember that one game. We absolutely dined out on that for 20 years. Like, you know, it was unbelievable. I'd never seen my dad cry. Like, in absolute sheer happiness. Like, it was one of the most unbelievable things. Imagine going in on that Monday morning after years of being picked on and suddenly your team has just absolutely thrashed United 5-1.
I know, like, it's kind of a historic game, but, yeah, like, were you worse than them generally? Like, what were the standards of the teams? Was this out of nowhere, or was it?
I feel like at that time, I presume Fergie was in charge at that time. He must have been by then. Yeah, yeah. So, and they had a good, you know, they had a solid team. I remember Mark Hughes scored, he probably scored the best goal of the game. It was like a volley, I think. He scored the best one for them. But there was just something. And I think our manager was like Mel Machin. Like some mental name from the 60s.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, have you, Mel Machin? Is that even a real person? But it absolutely came out of nowhere. Like, it wasn't, you know, now you have, you know, you've got Ronaldo's and, you know, Aguero's and De Bruyne's and all these beautiful sort of foreign names and the influence. And I'm looking at them now, literally, Oldfield, Morley, Bishop, Inchcliffe. I mean, it's like some out of Roy the Rovers. Like,
well, in those days when Man U weren't good, before they won, they hadn't won the league in 25 years or whatever, a bit less by that. How are your feelings towards them? Like, did you still hate them? Do you hate Man U?
I mean, I don't really hate them even now, to be honest. I've never been one of those fans who hates
You don't
other
seem
other
like,
teams.
Like a man full of hate.
Yeah, and like every so often someone like, I'll get a text off a United fan, mate or something, that's full of like bile and banter. And I'm like, oh, this is for the wrong guy. I'm not that guy. I'm not bothered. I'm actually not bothered, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I've never really been like that, really. And, you know, and obviously over the years, you know, certainly in this job, you know, you end up meeting people. You know, Sir Alex Ferguson lives around the corner and in Wimslow there, and I sort of see him every so often, done a few charity gigs for him.
What's he like to bump into?
I mean, he's absolutely even when he's walking his dog, he's terrifying. I remember I actually played at Old Trafford in, I played twice now,
recently,
just soccer
yeah,
the other week,
yeah.
But when I first played at Old Trafford, the two times that I did.
You play Old Trafford twice, don't you? Once on the way out, once on the way down.
Yeah, good to be back. It was for Comet Relief, Sport Relief, so Sport Relief years ago. And I remember we were on, it was the rest of the world, or the rest of the league side, sort of ex-pros and comics versus Man United ex-pros and comics, and we play the game, or actors or whatever, you know, famous people or whatever. And it was about a week after that Wayne Bridge John Terry handshake. Remember that famous after he'd slept with his wife or whatever, and he sort of did that weird thing where he sort of scooped his hand underneath and didn't shake John Terry's hand. So I'm in the lineup. And I've got, like, I can't remember what other celebrities were, Ollie Mers and the fella from Merlin. And they're sort of, Alex Ferguson's walking along the line. So I say to these guys, oh, when Sir Alex comes, I'm going to do that handshake that Wayne Bridge did, because it was topical as well, you know, as a comic thing. Oh, everyone will get it and it'll be a laugh. And I mean, this is before things went viral. Like, this is not even for the internet. This is just for the moment. This will be hilarious. And I'm like, right. And they're going, yeah, do it, do it. They're all like egging me on. And then he comes along the line, he's shaking, all right, son, yeah, have a good game. Yeah, it's a good thing you're doing for charity. And he's coming along, meeting everybody. And he meets Merlin or whatever it is on my left ear. And then he comes to me and I'm about to do it and I just absolutely shit myself and go, hello, Sir Alex! Just couldn't do it. He's genuinely terrifying in the moment.
Well, let's talk about managers. Early 90s, you mentioned Mel Machin. But yeah. The merry-go-round fires up pretty quick. Howard Kendall comes in, then you get Peter Reid. I mean, what was that like?
It was... I mean, over the years, I think there was a point where we had like 18 managers or something in the time Alex Ferguson had been at United. Like, it was something crazy. And we had some mad, you know, Kevin Keegan and, you know, we just had some crazy, crazy managers. But early on, it did seem to be, and I think like Howard Kendall like went back to Everton, I think, and we were all like absolutely heartbroken.
Fuming, put the fume in the fans, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely heartbroken that he'd left us to go to the club that he supports. How dare you? I remember Mel Machin was my first manager that I remember, you know, growing up. And of course, you know, it's hard when you're, you know, so my dad has got these wonderful memories of Joe Mercer in the sort of 60s, Malcolm Allison, and, you know, and they won stuff, you know, they actually won things. And then pretty much from, I don't know, like Tony Buck right through to Joe Royle. I think Joe Royle was the first one that actually got us into a playoff. And that was the first time, you know, that we any of us nearly saw Wembley or saw anything, you know. So
it's a mad kind of period of kind of underachievement. Peter Reid did a good job, though. When you go back through it, like, I was looking at Peter Reid,
twice in a row you finished fifth.
And he had a decent, you know, we had Uwe Rosler and we had some brilliant players, Nicky Summerby played, Peter Beagrie. That was the sort of time where it was exciting to be a City fan because they were brilliant. You know, they were really good players. I remember when Alan Ball, and then we got Alan Ball at one point, which was just this high-pitched, angry man shouting every week. But yeah, I guess I sort of don't remember that season really. I remember it being a good season, but I didn't realise we'd finish fifth. So that's something, I guess.
It's just mad, really, because Peter Reid, he did quite a good job at Sunderland and stuff. He's quite a good, in hindsight, he's quite a good manager, Peter Reid. Even though somehow he's not considered that, maybe, by public opinion.
91, you finish above United under Peter Reid.
Crikey.
Like, it's crazy, isn't it, how well he did, really, it's kind of forgotten. The other thing I wanted to mention is, when you watch those old clips back, how good are your kits?
We've never had a bad kit, to be honest.
Incredible.
I've got a couple of them in a drawer marked, these will fit you again one day. and in my hopeful drawer. And they're great. Some of them are actually... In fact, it's only in the last few years where we've totally gone off the ball. Some of the third kits we've got, like there was one last year that was yellow and pink, looked like a milkshake gone wrong. You know, it was... I don't know what they've done in the last few years.
What was you seem to be constantly advertising, it's sponsored by Brother for years.
Brother, yeah. So
I don't even know what that was.
They make printers and stuff. I think this one is. In fact, this one that I've got right next to me is Brother. So obviously somewhere
it worked. I remember when
my dad did hate United. He's very different to me. And I remember there being a year when my mum brought a like a music system home and it was Sharp and he wouldn't have it in the house. He wouldn't have it in the house.
Did you go to Main Road much in those days?
I mean, not loads. My dad used to go, and as kids, you used to, you know, when you were younger, you could get in for free. And then, like I said, we used to get in, watch the last 15 minutes when we got sort of teenagers. And it was very much, it was very much a man's place. It wasn't for kids and it wasn't for women. And so it would be where men would go to, essentially, I think, I always saw it, you know, later on I realised it was seeing this mild-mannered man, my dad is so soft and gentle, suddenly shouting and screaming at a referee or a left-back or whatever. And it just seemed to be the week of being talked down to at work by management. you know, or you know, my dad was a union rep and a shop steward and stuff. So dealing with management and people that up further up the hierarchy, it just seemed to be a release, you know, yeah. in a way. And as kids, I used to think, well, I'm glad the left back's getting it and we're not. You know what I mean? So I'd rather he was taking it out on them. So I remember there being moments of us just, I mean, crikey, and this is obviously before, you know, some of the horrendous accidents that have happened, but there was definitely times where you were in that stand, even as kids, just thinking, Jesus, this isn't, I'm 9 years old and this doesn't feel safe, you know? Yeah. And you'd be having fucking Bovril tips on your head and pints of lager and stuff. I remember there being one year where my dad was, he'd shouted, I don't know what the swearing situation is on this podcast.
But, no, go for it.
So my dad, we'd never, he swore a bit at home, but not loads. And then suddenly he shouted at the referee, well, you're fucking in it. And me and my brothers are sat there like, I'm like eight, my brother's six. We're sat there like, oh my God, can't wait. And he went, look, if mum asks, don't tell her that, you know, dad. swears at them. Not that she's ever going to go, did he swear at the match? Like, that's never going to be a conversation. And then he said, he went, do you know what? For the next 90 minutes, go for it. So if you want to swear, this is the place to do it. Get out your system and shout and swears and swear. So I was like, oh my God, I'm like 8 years old being told you're allowed to swear. I'm like, referee, you bloody idiot. Like, just like, you know. And my brother had not done it. And then at half time, my dad was like, do you want a snack? And my brother, 6 years old, went, I'll have a fucking pie. I was like, I don't think... That's what he meant.
Talk about Main Road as well. Like, it looked, the pictures looked dangerous. Like, this one stand's like scaffolding. You're like, how's that not blowing over in the wind?
Yeah, it was like four different stands.
Yeah, it was
built
a real mismatch.
At four different eras, basically. So, yeah, like, and one of them was like the Victorian era, Edwardian. Like, it was, yeah, I don't really know.
It's like those museums you go to where you like walk through the history. You go through a different area.
It was crazy. So
or the Crystal Maze.
Yeah, we had let's go to the Kippax stand. Yeah, and the Kippax was quite a formidable, you know, stand, a bit like the Stretford End or you know, over at Liverpool, the Kop and that. So it was you know, lots of singing and so that was always enjoyable, you know. But again, as a you know, someone who later on went to do musicals, you know, I always had an ear for music and I'd always be thinking this could be better. You know, if we you know, if we met in the pub at the beginning and just sort of said, right, your altos, your tenors, you know, we just sat people with people who sang like them. This could really make a difference, guys.
Back to the start of the 93-94 season. So Peter Reid, who's done so well, two fifth place finishes and a ninth place. He gets, what, four games in? Three defeats and a draw. And Peter Swales, your controversial early 90s German.
Swales out.
Gets rid of him. And this really starts the fans against him. Doesn't it?
I remember Swales being like shorthand for bad chairman.
Yeah, and he was like, even now, I've not seen a picture of him for years, but yeah, I can see this sort of like greasy comb over. he was like the epitome of a sort of 70s businessman.
He was very central casting, wouldn't he? If you put him in a show as a football chairman in the 90s, people go, it's a bit on the nose, that.
Yeah, it's a bit obvious, yeah. But I remember going down to the ground and, you know, we had placards and it was like Swales out. And there was like pictures of him in like dressed as like a Dracula figure. Like it was a real big, you know, Swales out was like a big campaign. I think it was one of the first times, I guess, that football, you know, football fans went, you know, we've got a voice here.
And did it work? Did he go?
He did. He did go. I can't remember what year he went.
I think it was the following February with this season starts in 93.
He was a real Manc, like, you know, he went to school in Manchester, like he worked in like he was a real prominent sort of Mancunian. But then we had Francis Lee came in, who was a former player, who's like one of my dad's favourite players, Franny Lee, who'd made loads of money from toilet roll.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he'd be laughing now. Yeah. Crikey. Cha-ching. But he then took over as the chairman. And I don't necessarily remember him being much better. The ship didn't really steady until we got David Bernstein and it sort of went a bit, you know, and obviously now with the shake, peace be upon him, that we're off, yeah.
Yeah, Peter Swales sacked 11 managers in his 20 years, and this is in a time like he takes over in 73. This is a time where managers are manager for years, like 6 years probably the average, and he's turning around. There's also accusations he was picking the team. He's a really early adopter of that.
That makes sense. Yeah, yeah. I didn't know that.
I love that 11 managers in 20 years is considered like a big sacking, whereas now that would probably be like
the average,
He's got quite a lot of got a lot of patience, Peter Swales. He's only sacked 11 managers in 20 years. Yeah. He really lets them have a good year in the job.
Yeah, we had some weird one. I remember like Brian Horton.
Well, yeah.
Being a manager.
He came in after Peter Reid, having just steered Oxford United to 14th in the second division.
Oh, well, so why not?
What kind of pedigree is that?
Was he connected to Man City? Why have you ended up...
I don't think so. I don't think there was any connection, really. He never played for us or... anything like that, I don't think. But yeah, he managed us for a bit. But again, it was sort of not like a... I don't remember being excited during that era.
No.
It's the start of the decline, isn't it? I think Horton, you finished 16th, and then by the end of 95, you're down to 17th. And now this is where the relegation battles have really begun now.
Yeah, it was. I remember there being... I think Alan Ball was the... Was that the first time we went down, I think?
Yeah.
And I remember he was sort of... His time is sort of saved... Because he signed Giorgio Kincladze.
Oh, yes. And how much did you love him, though?
I mean, to a ridiculous level, you know. And I remember him, like, he was, like, he'd get in the team now. Like, he was that good. Like, he would be, like, keeping De Bruyne on the bench. Like, this guy was, the story was, whether it's an urban myth or not, but the story was that his dad wanted him to be a professional footballer. His mum wanted him to be a ballerina. So he went to ballet as well as football. And that's why he was so majestic on the ball.
And Kladze will try and beat his man, and suddenly space opens up. Still Kincladze inside the penalty area. This will be a fantastic goal. Oh, that's mesmeric. It's sublime. And it's typically Georgi Kincladze. A footballing moment to treasure.
Oh, he was unbelievable. Like, that was the first time we'd ever seen, like, proper, skillful, you know, European football. You know, we'd never really had... We'd had, like I said, we'd had, you know, people who could bang in a goal, Niall Quinns and Uwe Rosler, and Beagrie was probably the sort of classiest player we'd had up to that point. But, he was just on another level, old Gio.
What went wrong?
We got relegated, and he was clearly too good for that team. He was just too good for that team. He was just playing on another level. He was like playing... He was playing proper football. we were still oofing it up front to the big man.
Yeah. The goal he scores as well, where he takes it around everyone, is one of my favourite goals to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the way the sound, the crescendo at Main Road, as he just beats another player, and then the sound as that goal goes in.
Yeah, I remember there being a year where... I remember I was going to the club shop, and we had... shirts. I don't think they were that season shirts, but they were the, you know, season before. And it was one of the years where you could first start getting names put on the back of your shirt. It was quite a new thing at the time. And I remember going along, and me and my brothers, and there was three of us, and you go along. But I remember it being like, it was like £3 a number and, you know, £2.50 a letter or something like that. And my dad going, right, who do you want on the back of your shirts? And the three of us going, Giorgio Kincladze, and my dad looking at money in his pocket and going, you can have Vonk. You're the only kids in school with Vonk on the back of your shirt, like Michel Vonk.
This mid-90s period is where United and City, the gulf opens up. I wonder, did people in your school swap allegiances? Did you have any mates who changed?
Yeah, there was definitely a couple of lads who changed. Man. And also, it was the first time that I noticed girls getting interested in football, whether that was because of, you know, gigs or, you know, they had some sort of quite pretty boys as well in their team. It was the first time that I'd sort of started to see girls get interested. Up to that point, you know no better, do you? You just think it's for boys.
They weren't into Niall Quinn and Peter Beagrie.
Weirdly, that wasn't what was doing it for it. And so, yeah, I remember that being something I sort of noticed quite early on, really.
And were they all Man U fans?
Every one of them. Every one of them, yeah. I remember there being a girl called Julie who supported City, and I just thought she was brilliant. She was my favourite.
What was the kind of... Because there's this kind of classic cliche joke about all the Man U fans live in London. But I went to uni in Manchester, and I was surprised by... Actually, I mean, this was around 2000, so it was really at the peak of Man U being good. But I was surprised by how heavily most people did support Man U, it felt like.
Yeah, totally. It's like one of these urban myths that, obviously, we're not going to try and dispel it because it's something to cling on to when you've got nothing else. You know what I mean? A bit like they sort of cling on to the fact, you know, now these days they go, oh, City can't fill the ground, even though when you look at the stats, they're like, well, no, it is full, but, you know, for
whatever
reason.
Well, I was watching last week.
Decided...
There was no one there, Jason, the game I was watching last week.
Yeah, quite. You're quite right. It's our ideal time to play football. But, you know, you, as football fans, you cling on to these, like, these little tidbits just to sort of go, oh, well, you know, that's something. I've got something. While they're winning all these things, yeah, but none of your fans live here. Yeah, that's because they've got a worldwide market and that means they're able to afford better players. Forget that.
How many of them live in Rush Home? That's the main question.
How many are here? Hey, like, you know, and now we're exactly, you know, I'm literally sat, you know, when I do go to the game, you know, our season tickets, you know, we're sat with, there's people from all over the world there, you know, so, and that's obviously the sort of sign of a successful club these days.
one of the biggest attendances of the 90s for City comes in the last game of the 95-96 season. City at home to Liverpool. You need to pick up some points. It's quite complicated maths, but basically you go 2-0 down at half-time, you pull it back to 2-2, and there's this classic rumour spreading throughout the stadium that actually 2-2 is enough, and it's not. Were you there?
No, I wasn't at that one, no. My dad would have been at that one. But that does happen. I love that. That's my favourite moment on Match of the Day, I think. You know, the last day of the season where they put the two crowds together, yeah, and they sort of play it together.
It was a real golden age for the transistor radio, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, the guy...
It was the end of the transistor radio.
It was really, yeah. Yeah, no one's Googling it. He's like, listening. I think they've scored. And then it spreads and they cheer. Oh, no, it's not. It was offside. And then that spreads. Like, it's, yeah, it was good times.
And also, I don't know if you see the clip, but Niall Quinn comes running out saying, we need, like, because I think it's 2-2, you're holding the ball up in the corner instead of, like, trying to go for goal because you think this rumour's going to happen. Niall Quinn runs out, having seen it on teletext.
Oh, my God.
It's always teletext.
I looked it up on YouTube, and the top comment is, this has to be the funniest relegation ever.
I'm not sure about that. But yeah, I remember some weeks watching the game on teletext, though. That's funny that you mentioned that.
What would happen, because I was growing up on Dartmoor, so I'd be watching a game on teletext, and we had slightly bad tuning to our TV.
Yes.
So you'd get, like, random letters would come up, but like where a score, and you're like, is that meant to be a scorer? Or is that like, you'd be trying to interpret the kind of 80% text.
They don't, the kids don't know. They don't know the pain we suffered. All we had was bamboozle.
When City went down, was that quite fun? Like playing in a division below or?
No, because I think that first season, did we go down again?
Yeah.
Was that last season? Yeah. So we thought it was going to be, hey, here we go. A win a week. And then we got battered again. We were like, what the hell? And so we ended up going down again to the next division.
Yeah.
And then it was fun. They were like, oh, okay, these guys are plumbers in the week.
Yeah.
And I think we can beat these. Yeah.
Well, the season after you go down from the Premier League, you actually just about survive, and it's the season after.
Oh, is it that right? Okay.
But that second season, you're down. You have five managers in a single season.
That's mad.
Adam Ball gets sacked, Asa Hartford. Then Steve Coppell, who only lasts 33 days before quitting because he says this is too much pressure.
Yeah, didn't he go back to Palace, I think?
Yeah. And then Phil Neal comes in, does 10 games, loses 7, and then Frank Clark is the saviour.
Frank Clark, yeah, he was good, actually, Frank Clark. I didn't mind him. Again, like proper, you know, looks like a proper manager as well.
Yeah.
Like, you know, from that time. But yeah, no, I remember Frank Clark being all right. Again, I don't imagine his record's that great. But and then Joe Royle came in. I remember Joe Royle being the first time that we were like, okay, we're going to win something here.
Yeah, really?
That comes to something, doesn't it? Joe Royle is your saviour.
When Joe Royle's your saviour, you know you're in the shit.
So Steve Coppell left because it's too much pressure. Like, was there this... huge pressure on them, maybe because it's Manchester, because there's Man United next door.
Yeah, they were always dubbed this sort of sleeping giants of, you know, English football. And but we were, I think we were in a coma. I don't think we were asleep. Like, we were absolutely not going anywhere, you know. And obviously having the rivalry with United, so you'd always know. Like when you, whenever you went on holiday, you know, you said you were from Manchester, they would go, oh, Manchester United. You're like, no. So, actually, poor pavor. Yeah, so it was, we were just this like little, and it's that annoying thing, and loads of football clubs have this, where you're not your rival's rival.
Yeah.
Oh, that kills you. That absolutely kills you. You know, because we're, United are our rival, and theirs is Liverpool. And it's changed a bit now, like, you know, and, you know, ours is Liverpool probably now. But it, growing up, that was one of the worst things. Just, it's one thing having an enemy, but having an enemy who doesn't even know who you are is an absolute killer.
So did the Man U fans, it's basically patronising you really a bit. Like that kind
it
of,
was really, yeah.
I do. I mean, it's on a much smaller scale. I do have that feeling towards Exeter City from Plymouth. Like, but like, yeah. It's that thing of going, I actually, oh, England v Scotland is a very similar thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I want Scotland to do well, which I imagine Scottish listeners are grinding their teeth hearing me say
that. No, I'm the same.
That.
No, I'm the same. I like all of, you know, anytime that any of them are playing, I want them to do well. But yeah, they're not supporting England anytime soon.
Who would be the other rivals around there then? Would you have any feelings towards a Stockport?
I mean, I live in Stockport now and I sort of have quite a affection for them, really. But there would have been a time where, we'd have been, in a similar way, we'd have been Stockport's rival and we'd have been like, who? You know, so it was similar. So we sort of treated them the same, really. So, yeah, I guess Stockport would have been a rival for a while.
Macclesfield?
No, I don't think we ever got as far down as Macclesfield. Thankfully. But again, you know, when these teams play us, we are, you know, we're certainly their rivals. But yeah, it was, United was the famous one, you know. And then weirdly, you sort of then end up with these odd clubs who just beat you every time, like Everton. But, you know, you just sort of...
With Man U being brilliant and suddenly being great.
I mean, they were all right. Let's not go too far.
When they were in Europe, are you one of those people that would have supported Man U in Europe, or when
absolutely
they won?
Absolutely not. No.
Good.
That would not. No, I'm not one of these half scarf knobheads. Absolutely not. No, it wouldn't have. I would never have got that far. You know, when they were, was it 99 when they had their treble win? I wasn't giving it. Oh, well done. Like, you know, I was absolutely sick to the stomach. You know, because I knew we'd never hear the end of it. And 2020, I'm right. We never hear the end of it. So I knew I could see the future.
They put Solskjaer's manager just so they can keep talking about it. On the other side of the coin, like in the 90s, so from afar, Man City were the coolest football team because Oasis supported Manchester City.
Of course,
And like Mark and Lard on Radio 1 were big Man City fans. Yeah. And it felt like Manchester was like, you know, a very kind of cool place and Man City were the embodiment of that.
Yeah.
Did you...
Yeah.
Were you an Oasis fan?
Like, I was, yeah. And the fact that they were supported our club, you know, was exciting. You know, it was exciting to be, like you said, to be cool and to be... And I think part of that was City were the underdogs all in pretty much every game they played. So that sort of linked in with people who win things aren't cool generally. No. You know what I mean? So the fact that we'd go into every game sort of as the fighting underdog, you know, I think that really helped.
It felt like Man City was Oasis and then Man U was Mick Hucknall. Because that felt like the kind of split, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, case rested, yeah.
Do you ever see...
Who'd you rather go out for a pint with?
Well, I'd be less scared with Mick Hucknall. Just...
you'd be in bed by midnight with Mick Hucknall.
Yeah, he would be with some woman who'd he'd met. But
I remember doing a thing for Sky once where it was a five-a-side competition with an ex-pro celebrity and a genuine, you know, real life fan of every Premier League club. And I remember like they had all these brilliant people. I was presenting it, so I couldn't play. They had all these brilliant people. And then Man City had Nick Leeson, the guy who brought down Barings Bank. I was like, this is the best one you could find out of all the Man City fans.
Was he any good?
He was all right. right, to be fair. But he was.
Wow, Nick Leeson. That's a blast from the past.
Yeah,
that's
very odd. Very odd.
Do you ever see him down on the here?
I've got to say, no, I haven't actually. Not seen him down there. But yeah, like you said, a lot of musicians were City fans. Badly Drawn Boy sits about sort of five rows in front of us.
Oh, does he?
We just got regular season tickets.
Yeah.
And the one year that I said to my dad, oh, I'm doing all right. Let's go corporate. And my dad hated it. Absolutely hated it. He was like, you know, I could see him like just, he couldn't swear. He couldn't, you know, he couldn't get into it. I remember him complaining because he had to come in shoes. that being annoying to him. So yeah, that I remember we did it for one season then. And actually, weirdly, I got a phone call from City one year who said, Ricky Hatton, obviously another big Man City fan, he's getting rid of his box. He's had it on the one on the halfway line. And he's had it for years, you know. And this was, you know, we're starting to do well now. And they said, we're just ringing a few people to see if they fancy, you know, taking it off his hands and having it. And I thought, well, you know, it fits 16 people in or whatever. You know, if I could probably split that between a few people, if it's a few grand, I wonder. I said, how much is it? They said, it's £60,000.
What?
I was like, nah, I'll stick with me 900 quid season ticket, man.
Wow. What are you getting for your 60 grand?
I mean,
you're
getting the full food and drink, three-course meal. You're getting to meet the ex-players every week. And it's for businesses, isn't it? It's not for normal people.
No.
You know, even us. Yeah. It's not for regular people just to go texting around your mates. I just need another 10 people to come to the match this week. Like.
We've got Niall Quinn coming in. He's going to say hello.
Yes. Have you done that? I've heard they've got this thing called the Tunnel Club now. Have you done that? Where it's like this two-way mirror in the tunnel. Have you seen done that? Is it weird?
It is a bit weird, yeah, because you sort of... The players are obviously thinking, we're being watched as well. They're like in an aviary, essentially. And you're just sat there finishing off your dinner and the players are just stood there waiting. It's very odd. It's very odd. But it's, you know, it's an experience. It's something different. And to be fair to City, they do sort of come up with these innovative ideas. And a lot of them, you know, they go to America and see what a lot of the American clubs are doing and the NFL clubs are doing and sort of, oh, we'll use that, we'll have that. And some of it works and some of it doesn't, you know. I did one year, actually, they did a big launch show, like at the beginning of the season, where they brought players out and stuff and I hosted it. And I think it was when we had Pellegrini and I had to like interview Pellegrini on stage in front of, you know, 5,000 City fans. And, you know, language is hard anyway. He's Chilean, you know. And so language is hard, but humour is the hardest bit of language. And when your only audience is, I mean, they're out there, but they're not going to laugh at loads of stuff because, you know, this is Pellegrini's the manager. They don't want to. And so I'm trying to have a laugh with Manuel Pellegrini and I'm literally getting nothing. Like, I'm getting nothing back. And I'm like, Frank Lampard was on. And I sort of know Frank's wife a bit, you know, Christine. And so thankfully he came on and rescued me. But it was probably the most painful 3 minutes of my life trying to interview Manuel Pellegrini.
Weirdly, I've had the same experience to do a bit of corporate stuff for West Ham. And I'd interviewed Pellegrini and I tried to, you're right, it's like blood from a stone. But I tried to make a joke about, if you like a manager, will you get a nicer bottle of wine than if you don't like the manager? And he went, no.
Yeah, it was basically that sort of stuff, yeah.
Okay.
All right then. That's that then.
This has got to be one of the few podcasts where people compare stories of interviewing Manuel Pellegrini. So you go down, like, to the bottom, not to the bottom division, to the
third tier.
What is now League One, yeah, the third tier.
Yeah.
Which must have been, in a weird way, quite fun because you're playing these tiny teams and, like.
Yeah,
you know.
It was. But apart from, obviously, we didn't win every game. So, you know, I don't know who we got beat by that year, but there would have been some absolute upsets.
Yeah.
And obviously, every week you're playing, you know, the cliche, but you're their cup final.
Yeah.
Every week. They're coming to, and when they're coming to your ground as well, you know, 35,000, I think it was back then, you know, it was a big old stadium to come to when you're, you know, part-time postman.
You were 13, at Christmas you're 13, so you start kind of terribly, really.
Yeah.
But then after Christmas you only lose twice, as you're like, but you end up third.
My main memory of that team is the kind of, you say there was no bad kits.
Yeah,
what was that one?
It was a kind of bright laser blue or whatever you'd call it. And yeah. you had like that, was it
a new Kappa? Badge? Kappa.
And you had a new badge, and it was it was the height of the yeah. big T-shirt phenomenon in football.
Yes, yes. So the Kappa kit. Yeah, but again, in Manchester, Kappa was quite cool. Like, it was music stars and stuff were sort of wearing. It was quite yeah. a cool thing. But yeah, it was odd, just like two naked women back to back.
Down your arm.
Straight down your arm, yeah. Yeah, it was a bit odd. And I remember there being that slightly weird sort of yellow and black stripe one.
Oh, yeah,
that I think
yeah,
we wore
yeah,
for the final as well.
Did you go to the playoff final?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, how hard was getting tickets?
Yeah, I don't remember any of that bit. I think my dad sorted all the, you know, so I would have been about 17, I think, 18. And yeah, I remember going, I've got a sort of embarrassing picture somewhere of me doing the thing, you know, when you're pointing at the scoreboard. behind you. But yeah, that was just, I mean, what a day. Just, you know, the trip down on a, you know, on a coach with just a few of my mates and my brothers and my dad and all his mates. And that was a laugh. And then the game itself was just, you know, we oh, love wow. a drama at Man City, you know, it never, we can never do anything. And again, I remember Nicky Weaver being to me just like, well, this is the greatest goalkeeper I've ever seen in my life. Like, what? I mean, like, yeah. If we've still got him next season, he's not at Barcelona, I'll be very surprised. Like...
The drama comes from the fact that 82 minutes is 0-0, Gillingham go 1-0 up, and then they yeah. score five or six minutes later, 2-0. And actually, yeah. when Gillingham scored the second, you can see the City fans filtering out. Were you tempted to leave?
Never. I've never left, ever.
Really?
Never left a game. I mean, I might have left that Leicester one the other week where we lost 5-2. But no, I've never left a game early. My dad is very, very strong on that. Like from an early...
I'm very strong on that. That's a yeah. big, I don't know. It's one of my most, I think it's one of my most stringent views I hold in yeah, the whole of the world. Mean.
I just think, well, you wouldn't leave a film early, would you? You know, like, even if you sort of thought, I can work out where this is going. You know, you wouldn't get to, you know, you don't want to be the only person who doesn't know the end of The Sixth Sense. So I just think, no, you can't leave a game early. That's, yeah, I mean, you've gone all that way to London. And then you've left early to do what? To sit at the same train station we're all going to be sat at in a bit. No, I've never understood that that idea at all. But it was, yeah, I remember it just being, oh, it was just a great day. It was a great day.
And this could still be won by either side. Nice ball inside by Asaba. Paul Smith turns. Good ball. Carl Asaba. Real chance. He's gone. Carl Asaba has scored for Gillingham. The finest moment in Gillingham's 106-year history. It could be the goal that takes them to the first division. And the 34,000 Gillingham fans are on their feet. More space now for Carlos Saba. Great touch. Robert Taylor here has room. Tries from range. He scored! Robert Taylor has scored! And Gillingham are heading into Division 1. They lead here by 2-0. And we only have some 3 minutes left on the clock. Links up again, chance here for Sean Gota. Tackle comes in, Kevin Horlock has driven that into the back of the net, and I wonder if there will be a late twist here.
The game is not over yet, I said that.
Lumped forward though by Weakens. Comes now for Gota, can't get his shot in, Dickoff, he scored! Paul Dickoff has scored for Manchester City, and Gillingham can't believe it!
Was it? Did it feel like it was the FA Cup final? Like, did it matter to you that it was Gillingham in the playoff final?
Not at all. No, it was just a final at it could have been the Champions League final. Like, it just was. It was yeah. a final in something. Like, you know, and I think we got a trophy for it as well.
Yeah, I think you do get a trophy for it.
Yeah, you're getting out for second. You get a trophy for third.
Yeah. City did a reunion of that team. I saw it was a 20-year anniversary last year, and they all look old except for Nicky Weaver, who looks tremendous.
I can believe
it. Looks like he hasn't aged a day.
Fabulous goalkeeper, just a hell of a goalkeeper. Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you know, you can. We got like Paul Dickoff. You know, if you've got a striker called Paul Dickop and he's got through school and he's still confident enough to play for the football team and his surname's Dickop, like, he's going to be good. You know, we had some great players. Sean Gota, you know, feed the goat and he will score.
Sean Gota was great, wasn't he?
I mean, he's the only player who, I think, like 20% of his goals just came off, like, his shoulder or his nipple or his bollocks. Or like, he didn't score with his feet every single time, but he was just always in the right place and just bounced off his face. He's like Mr. Bean, but up front.
Did you have, like, do you have as much affection for him or more than you would for, say, David Silva or Yaya Toure?
I think you always sort of remember that first, those first players that got you excited. And again, you know, whether it's a nostalgia element of that moment in your life, you know, where you're a kid, you've not really got massive worries that you've got now and stuff like that. You know, now I'm thinking, oh, I love David Silva, but, you know, I've also got a mortgage. You know what I mean? So, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's those things sort of counteract these things where back then you just, you know, these players were up on your wall. I mean, if I tried to, you know, if I said to my wife, I'm just putting this up here, it's just a poster of Aguero. It's going in the corner of the bedroom next to the chaise longue. I don't think she'd appreciate that. So, yeah, I think it's partly a nostalgia of that moment in your life. But also, like I said before about sort of winning those games, like that team and that the money that's been spent and stuff now, you have to succeed in that environment because you've got the best training facility, the best manager, you've got all these things going on. Back then, you were like, how have you managed to play so well surrounded by this shit? Like, how have you done this? That's amazing.
Do you miss Main Road?
I miss the sort of the memories of those, you know, the walks down and the laughs we had, you know, minding people's cars outside. You know, for 50p and then just going to watch the last 15 minutes of the game anyway and then quickly getting back to the car before they come back. I miss just like random, you know, people would just like bring you stuff like programs, and if you were hanging out outside as kids, they'd bring you the program or the Football Pink. Do you remember the Football Pink?
It was like was that a newspaper?
It was like a newspaper. I don't know if you had them everywhere. They had them in Manchester anyway. Maybe it was part of the Manchester Evening News, but it was like a rushed off the print newspaper with a review of the game you've just seen. How they got so fast. And it was just there. Football, get your Football Pink. And it was just there. Like there was, so there's all that, you know, and it was all walking everywhere. Now it feels like I'm spending 40 minutes trying to park.
Well, the main road was so, like, you'd walk down to it, because I went to a few games there when I was at uni. It's in the middle of just those classic Manchester terraces.
Coronation Street,
and it just appears. And it's just there. And it was such a kind of, it felt kind of so evocative of, like, Manchester, I think.
Yeah, and it's weird when you drive. I drove past there recently, actually. You know, there's nothing there now. It's just houses and, not, you know, it's quite heartbreaking, really. I mean, not in a real sense, but just to see that it's that all those memories are not there. And all those, you know, like I said, my granddad and great-granddad. And this is where my granddad punched that copper. You know, like, so many lovely memories.
Have you been back to Main Road? Have you walked around there ever since?
Yeah, I mean, I've driven past it and stuff. You know, sometimes take the kids on a little memory of daddy growing up, which they hate. And occasionally lock the back door because it looks a bit rough.
But, do your kids support City?
They do, yeah. Yeah, they all support City. And
it's quite an easy sell now, though, isn't it?
It's an easy sell. Even my little brother is 20. And, you know, he doesn't really remember a time when they weren't decent. You know, they weren't half decent. So, yeah, so for my, you know, I've seen my little brother get annoyed because we only won 1-0. You know what I mean? Like, so it's a different generation now. But yeah, certainly my kid, you know, we live in Stockport, which is notoriously a sort of a high density Man City supporter area. So yeah, it's a much easier for the kids. And also my daughters, you know, are now growing up in a world where women's football is massive, you know, and it's everywhere. Yeah. And they get to see women footballers on telly and presenting shows, and it's really inspired them. So it's a total easy, like, tapping to get them to support City now.
Yeah. And what role do you think, like, that 99 playoff final, do you think that was a sliding doors moment for City now? Do you think if it had gone wrong that day?
Yeah, 100%. I think the Sheikh would have bought Gillingham.
Tony Pulis, 20-year contract.
Yeah, be Aguero there on the south coast. I think so. Yeah, I don't think... you know, I think was it the year after we got where we got Keegan, and Keegan was great. You know, I loved having Keegan as a manager.
Yeah,
I really did. I mean, I think he did pretty well, if memory serves. He won the first division, which was the main thing, and then, you know, obviously tailed off like everything else. But I loved him. I loved Keegan as a manager.
Yeah, it brings an excitement.
Yeah, and I think we sort of did all right after that. Then we had like some weird, dodgy bloke from Thailand take over the team. We had like Shinawatra.
Yeah.
who was one of these rich people who wasn't really rich, just pretended to be. And, you know, and thankfully we got to the Sheikh Mansour and here we are. So, yeah, it was been some funny times.
Do you look back on the 90s as a good or a bad decade for Man City?
I mean, it was the decade that I must say now, I think, thank God I supported them, because nobody can ever accuse me of being a Glory fan, a Glory supporter. Oh, you only support them because they're, you know, they've won all this thing and got all this money. I think, you know what, mate? I've just go and Google it. You'll see what I've lived through. So I deserve this, you know.
Well, they can listen back to this now.
Yeah, when the away fans, you know, when they cheer, you know, where were you when you were shit? I think, I was here. I was literally here.
So our final question we ask of every guest: if you could go back to the 1st of January 1990 and live it all over again, would you?
Oh yeah, without a shadow of a doubt, I absolutely would. I'd be more forgiving of Micah Richards. I'd be nicer to him. I'd just probably enjoy it a little bit more, I think, and try and remember a bit more. Like, I wish I was. My dad is one of those fans who can remember. You know, like when you were describing one of the games there against Liverpool there, I'm struggling to remember those moments. I remember the key moments, but my dad can remember these intricate moments of certain matches and where he was and how he felt and who did what. And I sort of, if I could go back, I'd sort of just pay more attention, I think, just so I could remember those moments as well and be a boring old football fan like my dad.
Jason, man, thank you very much.
Pleasure, guys.
That was Jason Manford. That was Manchester City. Thank you to him. Did either of you ever go to Main Road?
No, never.
Yeah, did. I went a few times. I really liked
it.
It's
brilliant, wasn't it? I loved how you properly walk down these roads that look like Coronation Street to get there. I love those grounds. You get it. Have you been to Anfield, where it's just the streets are so close to it, so it feels like it's part of that community?
Yeah.
Do you get that West Ham, Chris?
Not quite.
But Plymouth don't have that either because it's in the middle of a park. But I absolutely loved it. I saw the derby where Man City beat Man U 3-1 and Gary Neville was at fault for the goal. And at the time, I didn't like Gary Neville, but now, obviously, I realise that he's one of the greatest human beings in the world. thank you to Jason. Thank you to everyone for listening. It's an absolute pleasure to be back. We've got great episodes this series. I already think it's our best series. So, I mean, what I mean is we've got more to come in the bank. I'm not just going, I think that's it. So cheers. We'll see you in the new year.
We are done here.
Before we go, we'd love you to come and listen and watch our Zoom show and ask us whatever you want and take part. It was genuinely so fun to do something live for Quickly, Kevin. And what's more, in the current climate, it's really the best way you're going to enjoy live football content. Go on to our Twitter or our Instagram. The links are there for the tickets. But if you are an XJ8 member on Patreon, you will all be sent a link to this and every Zoom show so you can enjoy them for free. We will see you then on Sunday, 25th of October at 8 p.m. But before that, we should just plug that next week we are joined by the wonderful Ivo Graham to finally look back at that Swindon documentary from the 90s. More discussion of if Glenn Hoddle was a bit better than all his players at football.
Yes, it's Swindon Town, 1992-93. It's called That's Football, and it is spectacular. Also features bonus John Moncur, so a fantastic watch. And that's with Ivor Graham next week. Robbie Slater, see you later.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. they've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.